You're listening to the Men's Podcast from PursueGod.org.
Hey, men, welcome back to the podcast. It's Pastor John here, and we are in our second week of a series where we are discussing God's gift of physical intimacy. And I would say if you haven't listened to the first episode in this series, I'd really encourage you to go back and listen to that first, as it really sets up some foundational truths related to this whole topic. And the first one being, in the context of a committed marriage between a husband and wife, sex is a great gift from God. I was convicted by an email I received from another brother in the Lord about a recent message, and I shared this in the last episode. We talked about sexual morality, and he just said, all of the sermons I hear related to this always focus on the don'ts. The church needs to do a better job talking about the do's, talking about the gift that sex is and how it should be enjoyed between a husband and wife. And I couldn't agree more. I think he had a great point. God gave us this gift for our enjoyment. God didn't have to give us sex. It didn't have to be pleasurable. It could just simply be a way to reproduce, but he gave it to us for our enjoyment. He did give it to us to build families. It allows husbands and wives to connect in a way that should be set apart from all of our other relationships. It really is two becoming one. Now, I think that idea of two becoming one in marriage is more than just physical intimacy, but that is absolutely part of it. In that last episode, we focused on things out of the bedroom. So we weren't talking about the act itself, but we laid some foundational things like speaking our wife's love language. And maybe you've heard that line that great sex starts in the kitchen. And if you like to goof around like me, you might have said, and sometimes it ends there too, before kids are in the home. But the idea behind that is that when we serve our wives, when we help out around the house, when we give up things we love for things we love more for them, it leads to greater intimacy. Now, we're going to stay out of the bedroom again today. We will get into it. We will talk about the actual act and your body and your wife's body, and we're going to get into some of that in the next episode, but that's really not the most important thing. The most important thing starts long before the act itself. And so what we're going to talk about a lot tonight is just how to get our minds right. How to get our minds right. And I want to start with this. Men, we should approach intimacy with our wives from the perspective of giving sex, not having sex. I want to read a couple of verses, and I recognize these are not in the context of husband and wife and physical intimacy, but I think there are truths in these verses that we can take and apply to this. I don't think this is twisting scripture to make it say what we want it to say. So the first one is Philippians 2:4. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. So the idea is don't look just to my own needs. Don't just think about the things that concern me, but think about the things that concern others. Think about the interests that others have. Again, I recognize that verse is not in context specifically being applied to a marriage relationship, but it should be applied to our marriage relationships. If it's applied in the broader context to all of those around us, to other brothers and sisters in Christ, then how much more should it be applied in our marriages? That I should not look out only for my own interests in my marriage. I should look out for my wife's interests. And so if that's a broad command, why wouldn't that be applicable in our sex life? I think it absolutely is, that I don't just look out for my needs. I don't look out for just my satisfaction, but I'm looking out for my wife's interests as well. So that's the first one. The second one is Romans 12:10. Romans 12:10 says, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Now, some translations, that second phrase, give preference to one another in honor, the more literal translation is outdo one another in showing honor. Now, again, I recognize Romans 12:10 isn't written specifically to husbands and wives. It's written to believers. We're supposed to be devoted to one another in brotherly love. we're supposed to outdo the other in showing honor. But again, I would argue, why would that not apply to your marriage? Why would I not want to show honor to my wife? And why would I not want to try and outdo her in that? Now, obviously, it'd be awesome if she's trying to outdo me in that as well. And in our physical relationship, that is one way that this can be applied. I attended a marriage retreat years ago, and there was a session on sex at the retreat, and the speaker challenged the men to think about it in this perspective. Think about it as giving sex, not having sex. I had probably already been married 15 years at the time when I attended that conference. I would say that I probably would have described the physical intimacy my wife and I had as healthy, you know, as pretty regular. But that really changed my mental approach to having sex with my wife. It wasn't primarily about me. It was about her. It's about meeting her needs. It's about showing her through touch that I love her, that I desire her, that I want to share something with her that I don't share with anyone else. Now, again, I hope she has that same attitude towards me, but honestly, guys, that's not my responsibility. That's between her and the Lord. My responsibility, according to Ephesians 5, is to love my wife like Christ loved the church and give myself up for her. That includes in the way that she and I connect physically, that I put it more about her needs. I heard a great teaching from John Piper on this, so I want to give him the credit. I'm going to steal a lot of his thunder. But it was a question that came in from a husband, and he was talking about how his wife would oblige him with sex, but he never felt like she desired it. And he just talked about how that really kind of crippled him, kind of crushed him. You know, just emotionally, he didn't feel desired. And I would think all of us in here can probably relate to that. We've probably all had some season in our life where we felt like, you know, even if our wives were willing to have sex with us on a regular basis, that they didn't desire it as much as we did, or they didn't desire us as much as we desired them. So I just want to read a few excerpts from that transcript, because I think Piper does a great job leading this man through that. He starts out by covering 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 3 through 5, which is the husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, or marriage rights, means sex, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. We talked about that some in the last episode. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again, so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So one of the things that's obvious about that passage that Piper points out is that sexual relations should be relatively frequent between a husband and wife. Now, you know, what that means to you and your marriage is between you and your wife. If that's two or three times a week, if that's once a week, if that's once every other week, but there shouldn't be these long, long stretches unless there's a medical condition or, you know, someone is away serving our country. I mean, obviously there are times when you're going to have a long stretch, but if everything else is normal, everything else is okay, if there aren't obstacles in the way, it should be relatively frequently. So then, how do we manage that? And I love how Piper talks about that we should really think about trying to outdo the other person. And so in this example, he gave to this husband who said, look, my wife will oblige me, but I don't feel like she's enjoying it. And then that makes me feel disgusting, I think is the word he used, if I remember the interview. And so again, I'm talking about getting your mind right. So we're going to start here just with Piper's encouragement to the wife on how she could get her mind right, even if she wasn't really enjoying the physical act, that she could take joy in the fact that she gives him pleasure. She could take joy in the fact that her husband only wants this from her. She could take joy in the privilege that he trusts her with his naked, emotional, physical ridiculous abandon, which he would be embarrassed in any other context to display. And he trusts her with this. He trusts his wife with that. And then that she could take joy in the grace of God that she has, and that she could give herself to her husband in that situation. And then he talked about for her joy. And he reminded the husband not to assume the worst about his spouse. And that even without sexual desires, she has other good desires to please him. And that is a kind of love that he can receive and enjoy. And so, yes, you know, you wish you were more passionate, more there, more engaged. That is a desire you have. That's normal. That's good. You know, what husband wouldn't want that? But he really challenged the husband, don't let that disappointment turn into a growing anger or a disgust or a bitterness, because that's certainly not going to help your marriage. We talked in the last episode about praying about our physical intimacy, praying that God would use that to bring us closer together and not push us farther apart. And then he also brought up an analogy of, you know, we do things all the time for our spouses that maybe if it were just up to us, we wouldn't be excited to do it. My wife might want to take me to some sort of museum that she is into that I'm not. And I can go and I can ho-hum around and I can gripe and complain about it, or I can be disengaged and not want to have conversation with her, or I can be present. I can ask questions. I can seek to ask why she enjoys it. Now, my wife's not a big museum person, so that's maybe not the best example for my marriage, but I'm sure you can think of something that your wife likes to do that's not really your cup of tea, but you do it with her sometimes. Maybe it's watching a rom-com. Maybe it's listening to classical music. When you do that with her, how do you engage in that? Are you griping and complaining the whole time? Are you letting out these deep sighs that, oh, you know, this is boring or this is tedious? Or are you engaging? Are you making it about her? Again, hopefully your wife will do that when it comes to physical intimacy. If it's not her thing in the sense that your motor runs higher than hers does, but even if she doesn't, again, I go back to what we talked about before, that you and I are called to love our wives like Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So think of sex as giving sex, not having sex. The next area where I think we need to get our minds right, especially men, although I'm afraid more and more women have a skewed view of sex because of pornography and the media, but it's just our expectations. If your expectations for what healthy physical intimacy is like are primarily generated from what you've seen in the media or online, you need to get your expectations in line with reality. That's not the real world. It's make-believe. Now, you have to be really careful when you do some of this research. I was really careful with this. I even asked my wife to go back and look at all the articles that I had pulled and all the different surveys online, because this kind of topic, if you're not careful what you're searching in Google and looking up different articles, can take you down some bad paths. But for example, let me just give you some ideas of how we can get expectations that are just not in line with reality. So for example, our wife always desiring us, always getting turned on at a moment's notice. That's just not the way it typically works in the real world. Now, again, I know in some marriages, the wife's motor might run higher than the husband's motor. I know that happens from time to time. But typically, men's desire for sex runs at a higher frequency than women's. And we're more visually stimulated than they are. You know, I've been married 30 years. And I can still see my wife walk across the room and get turned on. And I'm not ashamed to say that. That's awesome that I still feel that way about her after 30 years. My wife's not like that. And I know my wife loves me. I know that, you know, at times my wife desires me, but she's just built differently than I am. And men, we need to learn to be okay with that. That's why so much of this stuff that's, you know, starts outside of the bedroom is important, to help our wives get in the mood, to help our wives kind of get their motor running. So if you think that, you know, you just walk in the door and she sees you and she's going to desire you, or if you think that her motor is going to get running as quickly as yours does, most of the time that's not the case. Now, again, I'm not saying always, but most of the time that's not the case. Another unrealistic expectation you might have is how vocal your wife is during intercourse, during sexual intimacy. You know, if you've watched a lot of porn, I mean, we all know what the soundtrack to those porn movies are like, and the moaning and the groaning. And for most of our wives, that's not the real world, even when they're enjoying it. And especially when you have kids in the home, I mean, that's just not how it's going to be. So if that's your expectation and something is less than that, you're going to feel disappointment. You're going to feel either disappointment in your wife. You're going to feel disappointment in yourself. Again, these are the ways the enemy will create divisiveness and create isolation in the physical intimacy that we share with our wives. Another expectation is, you know, the length of time. Again, this is something you want to be careful when you're searching, but I looked at multiple studies, and multiple studies say that, you know, vaginal intercourse, the actual act of intercourse, the average duration is anywhere from 3 minutes on the low end up to 10 minutes on the high end are the averages. It seemed like 4 to 7 was the number that I saw more often than any. And again, I looked at quite a few studies, tried to look at ones that were from, you know, reputable either institutions or health organizations. So if you think making love with your wife is going to be a 30, 45 hour long, you know, hour long enjoyment every time of actual intercourse, because that's what you saw in the movies that you watched, I mean, you have no idea how many takes they took to shoot that scene. You have no idea what kind of medicine and stuff they're putting on the guy to keep him from having any feeling down there. And again, I'm obviously trying to honor God and how we talk about this, but guys, it's just not realistic. Another unrealistic expectation sometimes is the positions. You know, some of the movies you and I have seen probably growing up, I mean, those positions are not comfortable for our wives. It's not going to lead to increased intimacy, and it's not something that they're going to enjoy. And so, again, if I'm thinking about it as giving sex and not having sex, if I'm thinking about what's going to be pleasurable for my wife, what's going to make her not only feel good physically, but feel cherished, feel cared for, feel like I'm not using her to just meet a need that I have, but that I really want to be present with her, all of those things go into that. All of those things go into how we explore in the bedroom. And I'm not against exploration. I'm not against different positions. I think a little variety is fantastic in our marriages. But again, we have to have realistic expectations. We can't take what media or specifically the porn industry tells us as good and healthy as the baseline, because that's just not right. The other thing I would encourage you to do, men, is to help your wife get her mind right. Now, that may be in the same area of what we just talked about, her expectations, what she's expecting, but I think it's a little different primarily for our wives. I think the main way that we can help our wife get her mind right is we help her feel cherished. A wife who feels cherished and secure, a wife who feels safe, a wife who trusts her husband is much more likely to desire sexual intimacy and be a little more, willing to try new things than a wife who feels neglected, a wife who feels they're just stuck in a trap of comparison. So one of the biggest ways you can help your wife get her mind right is you need to absolutely get rid of anything in your life that causes your wife to feel like she's not measuring up. So I'm not talking about just hard porn. Obviously, you shouldn't have any pornography in your life, men. You know, some of you know my story. About 15 years ago, I had a 6 or 7 month period where I was looking at porn regularly. And as part of that healing process, I remember my wife told me, you know, up until recently, I never compared myself with other women. I always felt secure in who I was, and I felt secure that I was attractive to you. I knew that I was desirable to you. And she said, now after this, I've noticed myself comparing myself to other women. That broke my heart when she told me that I had ruined that. I snatched that from her because of my selfishness. Now, I think 15 years later, she would tell you she has that back. I think I've earned that trust back. I think, you know, I've had victory in that area long enough now that she no longer does that. I tell her all the time that she's beautiful. But you can tell your wife all the time she's beautiful. If you're looking at other women, she's going to get stuck in that comparison trap. And she's going to be much more inhibited when you're intimate. That's just the nature of her makeup, of her psychology. You know, Song of Solomon probably talks to us more about physical intimacy than any other book. And I want to read parts of chapter 1 and chapter 2. And I want you to see what a great job the groom does in helping his bride get her mind right. So I'm going to begin in chapter 1, beginning in verse 5. And this is the young woman speaking. She says, "I am dark, but beautiful. O women of Jerusalem, dark as the tents of Kedar, dark as the curtains of Solomon's tents. Don't stare at me because I am dark. The sun has darkened my skin. My brothers were angry with me, and they forced me to care for their vineyards. So I couldn't care for myself, my own vineyard." Do you hear the insecurity there? Do you hear her comparing herself to the other women of Jerusalem? She's talking about her complexion. She's had to work out in the sun. She's darker than they are. Isn't that funny how things change? Now we spend money to look darker. We go to tanning beds. We go out and bake in the sun with tanning oil. But in their culture, she didn't want to be dark-skinned. She says, "Don't stare at me because I'm dark and the sun has darkened my skin." So you can just hear the insecurity in her voice. Now I want you to hear later the young man's response. He says, "If you don't know, O most beautiful woman, follow the trail of my flock and graze your young goats by the shepherd's tents. You are as exciting, my darling, as a mare among Pharaoh's stallions. How lovely are your cheeks. Your earrings set them afire. How lovely is your neck, enhanced by a string of jewels. We will make for you earrings of gold." So that's in chapter 1. She's insecure. He's reassuring her that she's beautiful, that she's exciting to him. And now this is what I think is really cool. In chapter 2, this same young woman says, "I am the spring crocus blooming on the Sharon Plain. I am the lily of the valley." And then he responds, "Like a lily among thistles is my darling among young women." She's bought into it. She believes him. She now looks at herself as the lily of the valley, as the rose of Sharon, depending upon the translation that you're looking at. She no longer has those insecurities. So the groom, the young man in this case, has done such a good job at speaking his affection and speaking compliments and telling her that she's beautiful, that she believes him. And that has made all the difference in the world for her. And men, we can't wait until we want to be intimate with our wives to do this. These compliments to our wives about their beauty need to be steady. They need to be consistent. And don't compliment them just on their looks. I'm not saying we want to reduce our wives to just how they look. By all means, compliment her on her love for the Lord. Compliment her on the way she mothers your children. Compliment her on her faithfulness. All of those things. But do compliment her on how she works. I think men do the comparison thing. I look around at a few guys at church that are ripped. You know, they're built and I think, oh man, I could probably hit the gym a little more. But I don't think we battle the comparison game nearly as much as our wives do. I mean, there are industries built on that, entire industries, billions of dollars industries, right, that try to convince our wives they don't look the way they should look. And so they need to hear from us on a regular basis that they look good. And I know we have mainly men listening, but I know a few wives who listen to this podcast. Wives, could you do us a favor? When we do compliment you, would you just take the compliment? Would you not run yourself down? I'll just speak for me. You know, nothing discourages me more from complimenting my wife about the way she looks than when she kind of poo-poos it. And I've got a lot of flaws, but I'm pretty intentional about telling my wife on a regular basis that I find her attractive, that I desire her. Man, we need to do that. But women, you can help us if you respond well. And even if you don't feel that way at the time, if you don't feel attractive, if you could just say thank you, that would be awesome. Versus saying, oh, no, I don't. Or you're just saying that. Like, don't do that. You know, help us out a little bit. And men, stick with it. You know, men, do you flirt with your wife anymore? You know, just a couple days ago, I walked in the kitchen and my wife was in the kitchen and it was pretty quiet. And I went, I let out just this big, you know, gasp. And she goes, what's wrong? I said, oh, nothing. You just took my breath away again. I give you permission to use that. I got some real cheesy ones, guys, but that one was pretty good. That went over pretty well. But flirt with your wife. You know, you flirted with her when you were trying to court her. You probably flirted with her in the engagement. You probably even flirted with her shortly after your marriage. But I know how it is. You know, kids come along, time passes, we get tired, we get busy, we get stressed. But flirt with your wife. I think that's super important. So again, these are all about getting our minds right. Getting your mind right in the sense that we look at physical intimacy with our wife as giving sex, not having sex. We want to meet her needs. And then we want to get our own minds right about expectations, not letting the media and in particular the porn industry set our expectations. And then lastly, let's help our wife get her mind right. If she feels secure, if she feels cherished, if she's not stuck in the comparison game, you watch. Your level of physical intimacy, the frequency and just even the passion you experience will turn up. I mean, a wife who feels secure, a wife who really trusts her husband is more likely to be willing to try new things, is, you know, more likely to be willing to make love with the lights on. I mean, that may sound silly, but I mean, guys, we're visual guys. And every now and then we want the lights left on. We want to be able to see our wives. And if they don't feel good about themselves, or if they don't trust you, that's less likely to happen. All right, have this conversation, but be careful who you have this conversation with. Again, if you've got a son who's single, I wouldn't get into a lot of this until, you know, right before marriage. Don't put any unnecessary temptation on him that he doesn't need to deal with. And I hope you join us next week as we get kind of into the bedroom for the last episode in this series. God bless you guys. We'll see you the next time around.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share this episode with a friend. Find more resources to talk about these topics with your small group, family, or mentor on pursuegod.org.